I stare over the back of my chair at the empty booth. Sid's booth. I'm trying to think. Colin isn't here yet. His seat is empty, like Sid's. I feel as if everyone is watching me, has been watching me all morning, ever since I squeezed my way through the door to escape the praying masses outside. Everyone looked up at me as I entered, and there was silence, just long enough for me to notice. The usual morning sheriffs sounded forced, as if they didn't want me here. Tori and her daughter Pyla look worried. So does Clarice. They look itchy in their seats, like they're sitting on bugs, shifting around on their behinds. But the farmers, Della and Abe, and even Kaylee, look at me like they want to shove me back out the door. I get the distinct feeling that I'm intruding on something. When I tried asking Kaylee about Sid, if he'd been in at all, or if she'd seen him, she just shook her head and left the plate in front of me without a word. I'm still staring at Sid's empty seat when I hear the door clang shut, followed by Colin's hurried steps. He sits down in his usual huff.
"Sheriff,"
he grumbles, and I turn to face him, his eyes searching the diner for Kaylee, who is usually ready with his plate, ready and wide-eyed. But she's nowhere to be seen.
"Weird mood today,"
Colin observes under his breath.
"Something's up,"
I mutter back at him.
"They're probably worried about Sid. He still hasn't shown back up."
Colin wipes the front of his shirt, his nervous tick. Then he tries to smooth his hair down at the sides as he scans the room. Kaylee comes out from the kitchen with his plate, heads our way slowly. Colin relaxes. Immediate needs and all that. He'll be able to think beyond his hunger in a minute. I poke at my square fish and then take it into my mouth whole.
"Got your appetite back, I see."
Colin thanks Kaylee, who wanders back off towards the kitchen without a word.
"Really weird mood today,"
Colin murmurs again before he digs into his breakfast. I watch the farmers as they watch their food. Maybe the food stocks are lower than we realized. Maybe they were warning people just before I came in. The mood fits. It's like a funeral in here. Maybe they didn't want myself nor Colin around to hear the bad news. Not after Colin's remark of shooting people for stealing parcels of berries. Well, too bad. If we're running out of food, we can't have people stealing it, even if it means someone might get hurt.
"Oh, I talked to Jacob,"
Colin says, his mouth half full, and I raise an eyebrow at him.
"Sorry."
He swallows and goes on.
"Jacob and Scully were at the station until late, and they managed to get a full print of those partials from old Rainier's fire pit."
Colin and Jacob live in the same big house their father left them, which, given the current situation at the law office, can't be the most harmonious situation for either of them. "Oh yeah? Anyone we know?" I lean back in my chair. My plate is empty, but I don't remember finishing my food.
"No, and not just that."
Colin picks up several of the dried berries, pinches them between his fingers, squishing them into a gelatinous ball.
"It's not anything we know."
He looks at the berries before putting them into his mouth, chewing slowly, as if in deep contemplation. "What do you mean?" My stomach grumbles, and I realize I'm still hungry.
"I mean, boots like that don't exist, at least not here in Stalford. Jacob and Scully checked with the cobbler over on Oak Street. He said that it's nothing that was made in Stalford, or anywhere near here. Says he's never seen anything like it."
"Well, that should make it a lot harder to return old Rainier's pot." Colin huffs in a half chuckle.
"Yeah, I don't think he's getting that back anytime soon."
I look around the diner. Everyone is eating their plates and talking like usual, but I catch Della staring at us before she quickly looks away.
"You up for a stakeout?"
I ask Colin.
"Catch us a berry thief?"
"You got it." I look over to the farmer's table. For the first time in as long as I've been coming to the diner, They're all gathering before Perry can make his move on Della. Dirty plates cover the table. I stand and walk over to them, and it's like everyone in the room draws in a deep breath. Kagara, I think. People shouldn't take Colin's threats of shooting people so seriously. As far as I know, there have been only one, maybe two, shootings by the law in all of recent history, including old Wilson's tenure. It's not like we're shooting up the town any chance we get. The farmers seem to increase in speed, hustling to the door, but I cut them off. Hey there. I step in front of the first man, his arm outstretched to the door, ready to make his escape. It's the same man that was with Perry the day before when they waved us down by the side of the road.
Hey there.
The man says, his arm still half lifted. He seems unsure of what to do next. I think we will go ahead and get started on that stakeout today. What's your name?
James.
Great. James, why don't you come with us down to the law office to fill out that report? Let's make the theft of those berry parcels official, shall we?
I guess, but we had...
I don't need to cut him off with words. The look I give him says it all. You have nothing to do today, because those fields you usually tend to, they're dead and dry. The man sighs.
All right, then.
He lowers his arm and turns to the other farmers.
I guess I'll see you guys later.
Great! I give him a big smile and open the door for him, waving to Colin that it's time to go. He's still sitting at our table, with a big grin on his face. I let James pass me out the door. He's stammering something about his horse being too far, and maybe this isn't a good idea. But I reassure him that it is. Colin is at my back almost immediately, and I believe that perhaps not everyone was against shooting the berry thief. Because as I let Colin pass me out the door and close it behind me, I can distinctly hear someone let out a low, "Well, thank Gara," just before the door closes shut behind us. As we enter the law office, James is still going on about having things to do, until I get fed up, pass him the paperwork to fill out, and tell him, "We both know you have no fields to tend right now. You said so yourself yesterday, so let's at least make sure that the stocks we have right now might actually last us until next season." He shuts up and gets to filling out the complaint form for theft. While James is busy scribbling away, I turn to Jacob, who's holding his mug of root herbs as always. Usually, Jacob looks like someone just passed him over for the position of sheriff, but today he looks smug like never before. Scully, ever the diligent new recruit, is poring over the print they put together the night before from the fire pit. I hear you have something. I don't plan on giving into Jacob's gloating, so I turn to Scully, who smiles brightly, barely containing her excitement. We sure do, she says, but then her smile fades. I mean, we have the print, but we have no idea who it belongs to. I'm sure we can figure it out. I pull a chair up next to her, and we will stare down at the sketch they were able to put together from the clay molds they made and the pit stamped with the scattered partials. But looking at it, I can't help but think that maybe we won't figure it out. The soul of the boot, of whoever fell into the fire pit, is not something I have ever seen before. All the boots I've ever seen have ridges and arrows sunk into them for grip, for maneuvering through mud and over rocks. The soles of these shoes have only straight lines, left to right, up and down, forming a grid of squares. This shoe would be no good anywhere. No wonder their owner fell into the pit. Huh, I say out loud, staring at it.
You crack the case, Harper,
Jacob says in a sardonic tone. No, but as sheriff, I'm probably our best bet. I shoot back at him. Then I turn to Scully, as Jacob gets up and starts noisily checking paperwork in one of the drawers at the desk where James is sitting. I can overhear him mutter,
"You almost done with that?"
at James, who stammers nervous apologies in return. It's weird, right? Scully is polite enough to ignore the tension between Jacob and myself. She's probably wondering what she's gotten herself into by now.
I have never seen a boot like that before, no. What about the people you interviewed?
Scully looks confused.
You could go back to the people you interviewed and ask them if they've ever seen anything like it. Who did you interview for this anyway?
Scully smiles.
Well, that should be easy. The only people that live out that far are old Rainier's neighbors, Abe and his daughter.
Della, I add.
Yes, that's her name. She's really smart.
Scully smiles.
She was building this really interesting machine when we went to go talk to them. It was this weird box that made all these strange sounds.
Strange sounds? Like a broken wave box?
No, it was smaller than that, and it was crackling and jabbering. So maybe they're trying to build a smaller wave box, make it easier to travel with the gospel. I didn't really ask about that. Jacob said to ask specific questions about the night someone stole Rainier's cooking pot.
Right. Well, can you go by again today and show them the boot print?
I turn to Jacob, who is still bugging James to finish his paperwork.
Can you go with her, Jacob? Earn your keep and all that?
Jacob grumbles, but it's hard to stay in a mean mood around Scully. Wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, and awfully excited to do any law work at all, I almost envy her, except that I wouldn't want to relive the day those feelings got trampled.
You ready, James?
I call out to him across the room. We can ride out with you to the barns, take a look around before we set up shop.
James looks pained, but holds up the finished paperwork.
I suppose.
I smile at him.
Promise we won't shoot anyone unless it's absolutely necessary.
He seems to find little humor in this.
Colin, James, and myself get on our horses and trot out along the fields towards the barns. Scully and Jacob's horse prints are still fresh in the dirt, and the horses have a bounce in their step, as if we're playing catch-up. But before we can make it all the way out to Old Rainier's, the large barns come into view. Fields spread out behind them along the muddy road, only slightly less barren as the season is coming to an end than when they were during the harvest. The ridges in the road are lightly frosted, as fall gives way to winter faster than ever before. The hooves of the horses crunch beneath us. As we near the first large barn, Perry and another man come out waving their hands as if we weren't already headed directly their way.
It's happened again!
I can hear Perry yell over and over.
It's happened again!
We dismount and join them on the ground. James looks sick with worry.
How many this time?
Two. Two parcels. I don't know how they got it out.
James shakes his head.
It's a little worse than you've been letting on, I take it.
I turn to James and then look at the other two men who stare at the ground.
Just a little worse than we let on,
James finally says.
Show me where,
I tell Perry, and we enter the large barn.
Despite its walls made of large wooden planks, the chilly air seems to follow us inside, and I rub my hands together and shove them into my pockets. We walk past a row of empty shelves until we get to the middle of the barn. Parcels, the length of my forearm and thick as my palm, are stacked one above the other. We're not as bad off as the rumors around town make it seem. But then again, these are the stocks meant to last the entire outpost through the winter, should we run out of everything else. I pick up one of the parcels and find it heavier than expected. These regular blueberries?
Yes, dried for the winter, of course.
James rubs the back of his neck.
Usually they last a whole year if they're dried, but that's when the season's warmer. With this cold, they're bound to last even longer, thank Gara.
Thank Gara, I concur.
It's not like we absolutely need all of these parcels, James goes on. It's just that if we don't have a real harvest the year after next, we might be in a bit of trouble.
I see, I say, taking a step back to assess the long rows of parcels that fill the shelves.
It's not like you can live off berries alone, either, I think to myself, but don't say so.
Is this where the parcel was taken from?
I point to one of the stacks on the top shelf, high above the ground, where there's a gaping hole at the top. Yes, Perry says, ever helpful. They took two.
the other man adds. The barn floor around the shelves looks unperturbed, and I stick my foot under the parcels on the highest shelf I can reach with my leg. Give me a boost. I command Colin over my shoulder, and he pushes me off the ground from behind. Flush with the shelf along my stomach, I start climbing up, gently lifting the parcel at the bottom of each stack with my foot before pulling myself up higher to the next shelf.
She's crazy,
I hear James from somewhere below me.
I'll catch you, Sheriff,
Colin cries out to me.
Thanks, Deputy, but I think I've got it.
My voice is muffled against the parcels of dried fruit in front of me. I can smell the berries through the cloth. Soon I'm eye level with the hole where the stolen parcels used to be. My right hand grips the top of the shelf, and I pull myself up just enough to leer over the edge. Not much more than a crawl space between it and the roof of the barn. I try to force myself to not look down, but do it anyway. The men beneath me look like little more than faraway faces staring up. I place my left hand next to my right to get enough leverage and hoist my head and torso on top of the shelf. A coughing fit hits me as soon as I'm splayed out on the surface. The shelf stretches all the way to the back of the barn, to length of my own body. Dust flies past my face in strings, where the light creeps through the cracked barn roof. With my hand covering my mouth and nose, I try to catch my breath.
Everything all right, Sheriff?
I can hear Colin's voice from far away. I pivot crawl to the edge of the shelf and stick my hand out and give them a thumbs up. As the coughing in my throat subsides, I look at the surface around me. In the dim light, I can tell that someone else has shimmied along the same surface. So this is how the thief can disappear. Light pours onto the back of the shelf in a circle. I crawl over and see that a small hole has been cut into the roof. Very small. A tiny thief, it appears. The hole is covered with a small plank of wood held in place by tied cloth and nails to obscure its existence from the road. Not bad, tiny thief. I untie and move the plank aside and slowly stick my head out. Someone has nailed tiny pegs into the side of the barn. Clever, but dangerous. A tiny and very desperate thief. I slowly make my way back down and tell the men what I found. James mutters to himself that it's crazy to try and go down the side of the barn, considering its height, and I don't disagree. But now we know what to do. I turn to Colin. I hope you're ready for some sitting. Colin nods his head and seems almost giddy. We bring the horses inside the barn and out of sight. The other farmer warns us that the animals best not eat the parcels, or we ought to arrest the horses as well. Then we tell the farmers to leave us and to go about whatever they would usually be doing, and hope the thief didn't see us enter the barn. We bring the horses all the way to the back and make them lie down, which elicits some angry grunts from Moon. Then we roll two of the carts used for parcel transport in front of them and sit against the horses' backs for warmth. Soon, both large animals have gone to sleep. As if they couldn't stand each other's smell, they face in opposite directions, their large bellies moving up and down in matching rhythm.
How long do you think we'll have to wait?
Colin whispers into the cold, silent air of the barn. I shrug. Then whisper back,
who knows? Considering they just stole two parcels this morning, it might be a while. Maybe they were getting ready to move on, one last big berry heist.
I consider this. The climb up the outside of the barn seems too daring a feat to have been considered with much caution. But who in the outposts would be that desperate? Every registered citizen of Stalford is entitled to a daily ration, so why steal more? Thoughts of secret babies born without Gara's blessing come to mind, but I don't know why anyone would risk such a thing. If caught, they'd be forced to give up the child, be taken away by the Constitute, and the child would be whisked off to who knows where, never to be seen again.
Either way, I think we should work in shifts.
I lean back against Moon.
And as Sheriff, I'm letting you take the first one.
I close my eyes and hear Colin say,
Why, thank you, Sheriff.
Moments later, I can feel myself drifting off to sleep, bone tired. Why am I so tired these days?
Maybe it's Prudence coughing at night. Her hut is only several paces away from my own. Sometimes I can convince myself it's just a dream, her hacking cough that cuts through the night. But if it were a dream, I wouldn't be this tired, would I? I hope they're just dreams of cough, I think, and then, despite the clouds of unconscious forming in my head, Prudence is very sick. Then I drift off. When I wake, Colin has gripped my wrist, and I jolt into an upright sitting position. He presses a hand to my mouth, and I wave him off, annoyed. I give Colin a questioning look. He nods and slowly points to the top of the shelf I investigated earlier. A rustling sound breaks through the quiet of the dusty barn. Slowly, Colin and I stand and edge along the shelves, our back to the parcels as we go. When we get to the bottom of the shelf in question, a berry zips past my face, just inches away from my nose. We look down. There are berries rolling along the floor, just as James said. I signal to Colin to move the carts out of the way and to rouse the horses. Then I sneak towards the front of the barn. If I can catch this guy coming down the side of the roof, our job is done here. Unless, of course, the thief puts up a fight. I rub my face, willing myself awake. A sharp wind hits my cheek as I poke my head out of the barn. The sun is starting to set. I must have been out for longer than I realized. Trying not to let the ground crunch too loudly beneath my feet, I walk quickly to the side of the barn where I saw the pegs nailed into the wall. When I reach the first one at hip height, I strain my eyes against the darkening sky. There's movement, but I can't tell how far up. Then, without warning, something heavy thuds against my chest. Caught by surprise, I'm thrown to the ground. My hands slip along the cold ground as I pull myself up and try to get to my knees. "God damn it!" I exclaim loudly. Then I can hear footsteps thump down next to me and take off, headed for the back of the barn. The two parcels of berries that knocked me down are still on top of me, and I turn to let them roll off. I run after the racing figure in the dusk. "Colin!" I scream at the darkening night sky, hoping he can hear me inside the barn. "Horses!" There's whinnying from a few feet away, but it's neither Moon nor Trapper. "Moon!" I cry out, and she's beside me. I slide my foot into the stirrup, and up I go. The sun is starting to creep behind the horizon, and only a few glaring beams of light throw themselves across the field before us. But I can see the thief. The thief's horse is larger than any horse I have ever seen. Its shadow casts long in the low light. Colin appears beside me, Trapper's hooves matching Moon's stride. All three of us are ducked down low, the thief only a few strides ahead of us. Keeping my head level, I stare at the giant horse, but I'm not sure there's a rider on it at all. Worse, the horse is gaining ground between us and the thief. Then I catch a glimpse of a small figure, pressed against the light brown coat of the animal, dressed in light brown matching garment. But there is no saddle. There are no reins. It's as if the rider is part of the horse itself, an extra appendage on its back, causing no hindrance to the animal's intense stride. The field stretches out before us and we ride on, as hard as we can, but as time passes, it becomes clear that we are outmatched. The large horse and its elusive rider continue to put more and more distance between us. "We're not going to catch them." Colin's voice comes out in jagged pants. I say nothing and press Moon on, and she gives off an angry grunt. "We can't keep this up." Urgency in Colin's voice. "Trapper can't anymore. Harper!" I stare ahead of us. It's a cloudy night. The sun has disappeared and it's almost pitch black out. I can barely make out the other rider far ahead of us. I relent. "Hey!" I pull back on Moon's reins and she stops instantly, almost throwing me over her shoulders. Trapper and Colin stop short just a few paces away. The horses breathe heavily in the dark. All four of us are spent. "What was that?" Colin is gulping in air and trying to speak at the same time.
"I have no idea."
I gasp, exasperated.
"So goddamn fast, Megara. So goddamn fast."
I know Colin is shaking his head in disbelief, even though I can't see him.
We're never going to catch this thief, Sheriff. Might as well leave the parcels outside the barn next time around.
No, we'll catch them. I look over towards the woods that run along the edge of the field, my voice steadying.
They didn't get the parcels tonight, so they'll be back tomorrow, and tomorrow we'll catch them.
We turn the horses around and head back towards the barn.
We heard the commotion, you all right?
James is standing near the entrance, Perry in tow.
I see you didn't catch the guy.
He looks disappointed. No, but we'll be back tomorrow, give it another go, I tell him.
Won't they know you'll be waiting for them?
James doesn't sound hopeful. It's possible he watched us chasing the rider, saw that we got left in the dust. They will, but I think that they need those parcels they didn't get tonight.
You saved the parcels?
I nod towards the outside of the barn. Took two to the chest, but they're out there.
Well, thank Gara for that, at least.
James sighs and starts walking off to collect them.
Very fast horse that thief has,
Perry adds and follows James outside. Ready to head home? I look over at Colin. No use in going back to the office tonight. Both Colin and I live on the other side of town, just minutes apart from each other.
Yeah, shortcut.
Shortcut, I agree. I think she's got one more ride left in her. I pat Moon's shoulder. We set off towards the woods that sprawls to the left and divides the town. It's dark now, but the path is well worn and the clouds have shifted just enough to let the stars guide us along. We ride quietly in slow trot for a while until Colin breaks out of his thoughts.
Who do you think that was?
He asks. A thief?
Yeah.
There's a hooting sound from somewhere above. It echoes through the forest as we weave around a group of trees to stay on the trail. I don't know. I've never seen anyone so small ride a horse so well.
Size of a child,
Colin agrees. You think it was a child? I ask, but don't believe it, even as I do. He hesitates.
I honestly can't say. The way they moved on that horse, it's like it wasn't human, not completely.
Maybe it really is a ghost. I laugh angrily. We're just out here in the cold chasing goddamn berry-stealing ghosts.
I don't think it was a ghost. But honestly, Harper, I don't know what it was.
Colin doesn't usually use my first name, and it throws me a little. And then Moon almost throws me off as well. With a loud whinny, she bucks and almost makes me fall off and into the brush. Moon! My yelp echoes through the woods. I grasp a branch of an oak tree that happens to be hanging above me and hold on tight. For a moment, I don't realize that I am, truly, dangling from the tree. And then I can hear Colin laughing like I've never heard him laugh before. Very funny. I look down at the ground below to make sure it's even enough and let go of the branch. The fallen leaves of the forest floor let out a crackling sound as I land. I turn to look around and see Moon standing on the other side of the tree.
I think she's as embarrassed as you are.
Colin is still giggling a little, and I try to look angry, but a smile escapes me. I make my way around the tree and pull Moon back towards the path. She pulls back. Moon, what are you doing? She never acts like this.
Is she all right?
Colin stops laughing. Yeah, I think so. She's just being a pain. I pull harder and take a few decisive steps up to the path and trip. There's something under the leaves. I lose my grasp on Moon's rein as I stumble over it and fall over for the second time that night.
Sheriff, are you all right?
Colin dismounts from Trapper and comes over to me. Yeah, I think I fell over a log or something. It must have been what Moon was avoiding when she bucked and tried to kill me. Mock accusation in my voice, leveled at my horse, which is still standing stock still by the oak tree, and I wade through the leaves on my hands and knees.
Let me help you.
I grab Colin's warm hand and he pulls me up. Thanks. I turn to my stubborn horse. Come on, Moon. Look, it's just a log. I kick against the mound beneath the leaves, and to my surprise find it to be far softer than a log. Oh no, I mutter.
What?
Colin looks down to where I kicked the thing. Not a log, I say. Help me get the leaves off. I'm not completely sure, but
Well, it's either a very long deer without legs, or it's human.
No.
Colin says softly, like he doesn't believe me, like I'm trying to amuse him. But I've already dropped back to my knees, and I'm clearing the leaves away from the body. It doesn't take long before Colin and I are standing over Sid. One look, and we know what happened. And now we're just standing there, unwilling to look back down at him, trying to gather ourselves, knowing what must be done next.
The top of his head is gone,
Colin says, matter of fact, staring out into the woods, not looking down at Sid's body. It is. Facts are facts, after all.
Where do you think his family is?
Colin wipes sweat from his forehead. I look around the dark forest. I don't know. But it's too late to go looking for them now. But we can't leave Sid out here either.
You're sheriff of this outpost. I think we should hoist him onto your horse.
Colin doesn't meet my eye and keeps staring out into the trees. As sheriff of this outpost, I think I should make you carry him, but as sheriff, I will take lead on this. We both look down at the poor man that was our friend, and Colin inhales sharply.
Oh my Gara.
Colin puts his hands on his hips and walks to the closest tree, behind which he vomits quietly. I realize we haven't eaten since the diner. I wait for him to stop heaving and to come back over to me.
Ready when you are,
he says, his voice hoarse.
I won't be any more ready later than I am right now.
I pull Moon closer, and she huffs, like she, too, knows what's coming. I take Sid by the shoulders. Shoulders wet with something that doesn't quite smell like fallen leaves or dirt, but like something densely human and animal and very old all at once. Colin grabs the dead man's feet, and we hoist him over Moon's rump and tie him to the back of my saddle. After we've secured the body, Colin lifts one hand and then runs back behind the tree one more time to cough up whatever is left in his stomach. I lead us back down the path, heading towards the law office instead of home.
This day needs to end.
Colin groans behind me, then spits on the ground. I don't disagree. The ride back to the law office is quiet. The body draped over Moon's behind me gently lifts up and down in time with her gait. Even though I can see Sid from the corner of my eye, I don't look back, and I pity Colin for having to stare at the body the whole way. Since we are a small outpost, our morgue is little more than a basement room beneath my office. We carry Sid inside, his body slick and limp between us. Both Scully and Jacob are still there. Both let out gasps when they see who it is, when they see what was done to him. Jacob, for once in his life, doesn't give me lip, and runs for the lek box. He turns to power the bulb that Scully picks up and carries ahead of us down the small staircase in the back of my office that leads to the basement room. Downstairs, we lower him onto the wooden board dangling from a rope used for this purpose, though I have never had to use it before, not once. We cover Sid's body carefully in cloth and lower him into the round hole by the dim light of the bulb. Down the hole he goes, a well without water, dark and cold. The slickness on his body will likely freeze over, and he'll keep until the funeral. But several days out in the woods like that, even in this weather, the animals, they got to him a little. And his head. Sid's poor head. I can't unsee it. I force my eyes to stay open as Colin and I work the crank, steadily, slowly, as Sid goes all the way down. We hear the clunk of the board hitting the bottom. Then we cover the hole, and all of us trail back up the stairs, the light of the bulb growing weaker as Jacob can't help his hands from shaking as he churns. When we get upstairs into my office, I led everyone into the small room before I close the door behind us. Then they all turn to look at me expectantly. I take a seat at my desk and look down, palms up, inviting everyone else to sit as well. Jacob. He startles as if he's forgotten his own name. You are going to find Sid's next of kin, but do it quietly. Someone was at the diner yesterday looking for Sid, claiming to be a sister's husband. But after what we saw tonight, I'm not so sure the sister of Sid's even exists.
so tread lightly.
Sounds good,
Jacob says, and I nod. Scully, I look at her. Tomorrow, I want you to go back to Sid's house and collect anything that isn't nailed down and bring it over here. Wait to transport the things until it's dark out. Anyone who isn't busy after dusk will come and help you, since it looks like Sid and his family cleared out of there, but there was still quite a lot of stuff left inside the house. There might be something that could tell us what happened. Scully, wide-eyed, gives off a shaky,
"Yes, Sheriff."
Colin, tomorrow we need to figure out what the hell is going on around here. I don't think it's a coincidence that we have someone stealing from the berry farm, and then just a 5-minute ride away we find Sid with the top of his head shot off. Or bashed in. Or something. I wince at the callousness of my own words, but no one else seems to notice, lost in their own terrible thoughts. I go on. Tomorrow, we're going to catch that thief, and I don't care if we have to shoot them right off their horse, because for all we know, they're the ones who killed Sid.
Harper?
There's raw fear in Colin's voice.
This plan, I've got nothing against it. I think it's a good plan. But there's just one thing we still have to consider.
I nod, waiting for him to get to whatever is making him this scared.
If Sid is dead,
he goes on,
where are his wife and his son?
You're right. I push the palms of my hands against my eyes. We can't start large search parties for them in the woods yet. Not until we've caught the murderer. It'll tip them off if they're still around. If it's the berry thief or anyone else, if a bunch of people start tramping through the woods, they'll know we found Sid. And let's not forget the guy from the diner. It's possible he was the one who killed Sid. But we don't know anything right now. And right now, not him. Not anyone else knows that we found Sid's body. As far as everyone else knows, Sid went to a birth. Or worst case, he's gone missing. That's it. So we can't say anything. Not yet. Not a word. Not until we know more. Colin and I will ride along the same path tomorrow and keep an eye out. But otherwise, we can't draw attention. I'm not sure my speech has inspired any confidence, and it sure doesn't feel like it to me. All of us stare at the floor of my office, under which, deep down in the ground, Sid's body is slowly being covered in ice crystals as his wet body freezes over. I shudder and break the silence. Everyone go home. Get as much sleep as you can. Tomorrow's going to be a very long day. I stand, and they stand as if entranced. We file out of the office quietly and get onto our respective horses. No one speaks. Even though I live near Jacob and Colin, I let them ride ahead, giving them space. I watch as Scully trails off west towards her hut. I slow further until my two remaining deputies are little more than two distant shadows ahead on the trail. Then I make a sharp right and double back. I don't know what it is, but tonight I want to do everything I can to appease Gara. Even if it's just by watching her wrath unfold across the sky. I find the same rock I sat on the night before. The prayer, its rhythmic chanting, floats down the beach from where the larger group of worshippers stands. After today, I have half a mind to join them, but I'm not quite there yet. All I know is that maybe we need redemption. Maybe we need to find a way to make Gara love us again. But how can we do that when she doesn't tell us what she wants? Maybe the answers are in the lights she sends us. Tonight, I am an empty vessel, ready to be filled with anything outside of my own thoughts.
My lips begin to mumble, along with the prayers floating along from down the beach. The first red light comes into focus. A whooshing sound comes with it, as if it were aimed at us.
Until now, Gara has made her wrath known only far off, out on the ocean. But tonight, the red light draws closer. And closer, and a white light suddenly appears below it as it draws up near the beach. Then there are three more lights behind it, twins, red, 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 and white, 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 and they are shooting towards us, all of them. The prayers down the beach stop. Gasps are drawn, but barely heard. The roaring of the lights are coming closer now, and they are not slowing down.
Others fall to their knees and bow their heads in prayer, ready to be taken. The first of the four red lights is so close now that I can see it dip in and out of the clouds above.
Its red light disappearing and reappearing as the fog engulfs and spits it back out. There is a dark mass that hovers around the lights, and I realize the lights are just part of something giant. this thing sprawled wide like a bird. Something inside me shifts from fear to daring. Then there is a whizzing sound, and the bird explodes into fire. There's more screaming from down the beach. People are running, trying to find cover, but I can't look away. Without warning, the other red lights, still far away from the beach, change course and shoot upward, and back across the sea, away from us, away from the screaming people. The fireball roars through the sky above my head, lighting the beach up like the sun. I can see people covering the faces of their children, hugging them tight, covering their own faces. The ball of fire roars past overhead, driving through the night sky, not slowing as it hurtles on. But it is coming closer to the ground. Not by much, barely noticeable, but it's coming down. Without thinking, I sprint and jump onto Moon's back, tying her loose as I go. She's more than happy to get away from the beach, the screaming, the people running wildly into the woods like they're the ones on fire. I kick her sides and we tear after the exploding, blinking thing in the sky. It's headed towards the Forbidden Zone, the zone we are not to cross, the zone Gara guards with wild beasts. But I don't care. If we cross it, so be it. It wouldn't be the first time.